Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is a podcast program, and the title is Nick Curto Presents the Creative Process. I'm Nick Curto, your host. A very brief background about yours truly. I was born and raised in New England, Springfield, Massachusetts, to be precise. I can never remember not being creative in my entire life, right from the very, very beginning. As a child, I did drawings and paintings, constructed small sculptures, and wrote and produced and acted in my puppet shows that were performed in the school. As a child and teenager, I attended the George Walter Vincent Smith Art Museum classes in Springfield, Massachusetts, and attended Tech High School, where my dad graduated, where I excelled in art and design and the drama club, and acted in school shows and design stage sets. I designed the prom, the big prom dance, and I built a golden bridge that you could walk over the Blue River made out of yards and yards of a tin foil. And the prom theme was called Moon River. And that was based on and inspired from the song Moon River that I believe Andy Williams sung, and it was a big, big hit. After graduation, I searched for an art school to apply to, and my first choice was the Massachusetts College of Art and Design in Boston, Massachusetts. I waited for a reply to see if my application would be accepted after I had traveled to the college to show my portfolio and my art and design work to the staff way before September. And finally, after a very long and painful wait, the letter arrived from the college and informed me that, yes, I had been accepted, and my life had absolutely changed from that point on. It was a time when I opened that letter that I will never, ever forget. While there, I became the president of the Newman Club. It's a Catholic organization in colleges, as well as the drama club. And after graduation, with a BA in advertising graphic design, I headed directly to New York City to begin my advertising design career in the Big Apple. I have been here right now for a long, long time. It's been an exciting life for sure. I became art director of a Fortune 500 company, as well as art director of smaller agencies here in Manhattan. I still am in contact with the Mass Art Alumni Office and have been chair of the class reunions that we do every so often, which have been incredible. I recently started 2 Zoom meetings per year to keep my class members close and connected. And I highly recommend doing that if you are doing reunions, because every 5 years or 10 years when they do the reunions, it's not really enough time. And it's been a wonderful experience to catch up with my fellow classmates who are now all over the world and doing many creative projects, and it's great. In fact, next month we're going to have another Zoom meeting to catch up. It's been an exciting experience for sure, and there's many levels of creativity that I've been doing all my life. When I came to Manhattan, everything was brand new to me. I knew no one else here. I had to go looking for a place to live, which I found in a small hotel in Times Square. And I found that little hotel through a book called Stay in New York for $25 a Day. And that included a place to stay and food and everything else. That book has long since been out of print because it's a lot more now for sure. Started looking for an apartment, which I found on the Upper East Side in what they call Yorkville, a wonderful area with lots of shops, and it's a very busy area indeed. Many wonderful shops here, and churches and incredible museums, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Guggenheim Museum on Fifth Avenue, that are about a 10-minute walk from where I live. So I was very blessed to find an apartment here. My mom and dad would visit me, and sometimes my sister would come here to New York, and I'd show them the town as I discovered it. So it was an amazing experience. A few years later, a few people from my class ended up here also, and I was glad to see them here. Also, I discovered a lot of new friends, got a job. My first job was in an insurance company where I was an assistant art director, and that started the process of working here in the Big Apple. I have had in my family tree on both sides, my Irish side and my Italian side, creative people. So, and they were very encouraging to me when I was growing up. And that's a real blessing if you happen to have that, those people in your family that urge you on and were creative themselves. Certainly. Now, as far as my classmates go, they really are from all over the world now. They're in Japan, they're in Europe, all over the United States, and I think a couple in Canada. And now with the Zoom meetings we do twice a year, we catch up on what's going on, and there is certainly a lot going on with every one of them, and it's really a joy. When I was here in New York City, interestingly enough, one thing that happened was that I really had to look at my life and what was my goals and who I was. And I realized then, and this is many years ago, that I was actually a gay man, and that the gay community was here, very visible. And I remember looking at some of their brochures, and I realized that they were very poorly designed and not well read, and not well written, rather. And so I decided, since I had majored in graphic advertising design, that I needed to help them. So there was a large organization here in New York City, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. They're in Washington, D.C. right now. And I took my portfolio and found where they were, where the office was, and knocked on their door, and a gentleman opened it up, and I said, "Hi, my name is Nick Curto, and I'm a design major, and I've seen your work that you've been putting out, and I'd like to contribute to the creativity of that, because I think we can do a lot more with it." And after one moment, the man said, "Would you please come in?" It was like an old friend. And they looked at my portfolio and said, "What would you do if you were to design this, the stationery?" And I came back with designs, and it was all accepted. And we ended up printing all those things. Later on, I made amazing connections with gay activists in the community here in New York City, and then was asked to do work with them in various projects. And one of them was to design the logo for the National March on Washington for Gay and Lesbian Rights way back in 1979. And I submitted designs, and they were accepted. And so they were being produced, and I get a phone call, and it was from the one of the chairs of the march. This was a very big historic march in Washington, D.C., and they said, "Nick, we have a question for you. We've reviewed your artwork and your copy that you've been doing, and we want to ask you if there's a way you can take a leave of your job in New York and come to Washington to live for a couple of months and be our national media director." Now, I was incredibly flattered that they would give me that honor. And I said, "Well, I could ask my job for a leave. When would you like me to be in Washington?" And this was a couple of months before the big march was to take place. And they said, "Nick, we need you yesterday. Please, if anything you can do." So anyhow, the bottom line was I was able to do that. I lived in Washington, working in their office there. I had a couple of people on staff that were volunteers to help me. And we credentialed a huge amount of people from ABC, NBC, CBS, the networks, radio stations. And I started getting a lot of mail from colleges and universities, and even from high schools, saying, would you credential us? Now, credentials mean that I'd give them a official badge, and they would be in an optimum space to photograph and record the upcoming march, which is going to be very historic. So I went to the head office where the chairs were, and I said, is it okay if I credential not only the mainstream media, but also the high schools, colleges, and universities that were asking to be credentialed for the march? And the answer was, Nick, I'm sorry, but no, we can't do that. And I asked, why not? And they said, because we're really going to just accept only major media. Well, I went back to my little office and was very disappointed. And I thought, you know what? This is a really wrong decision. It really was. Because these people that are now in, for instance, high schools, are someday going to be media professionals. And for us to turn them down at this point made no sense to me whatsoever. So I got up my courage and went back in the office a few days later, and I said, I really want to talk to you about this decision of not credentialing these colleges, universities, and high schools. I really think it's a wrong decision, and I want to argue the point. Eventually, they gave in and said, okay. Well, I printed an additional 1,000 credentials, which were those tags that you wear around your neck if you're in the news media. And the bottom line is a lot of them were gone by the time the 2 months were up and the march was taking place. And wow, it was quite an experience, and the march was huge. The another thing that was happening during the march was the first time the quilt project was displayed on the mall, and that was an example of people who had made quilts. Sometimes they were like 4 feet by 6 feet of the people, their loved ones, their friends, their partners, their loved ones who had died of AIDS, because AIDS was raging at that time. And they had made through cloth and stitching and so forth quilts, usually with the person's name that they had lost and perhaps a little quote or something about them. And they were extraordinary. And there were hundreds of them that they laid end to end on the mall for the march. And I can honestly tell you that walking through that quilt was one of the most emotional experiences anyone could possibly have, gay, straight, bisexual, or whatever, because this was a patchwork quilt of total love of the people who had left us because of the ravages of AIDS. And I'll never forget that. You know, many years later, when I was walking on Fifth Avenue right around Tiffany's, I heard a voice say, "Hey, Nick, is that you?" And I turned around, and I didn't recognize who was yelling to me, but they came over and said, Nick, you're Nick Curto, and you were the media director of the National March on Washington for Gay and Lesbian Rights. And I said, well, yes, I was. And they said, well, I was one of the people, the gentleman said, that you had credentialed when I was in high school. I'm in major media now. And I just want to tell you how grateful I am that we were able to be covering the march, and it was through your office, and just thank you very much. That was quite an amazing experience for me to hear that feedback. Now, here in New York, my jobs were in large insurance companies where I was an assistant art director and then a full art director. And some of those companies were Fortune 500. Also, besides that, another thing that happened was that I was at one point accepted in a major product design company, which was quite something. It was on Park Avenue, and I met some amazing people there. And one story I'd like to share with you is that they assigned me to the Emilio Pucci sunglass account, and they asked me if I'd design a full-page ad, color, and that I would have to choose a model, a woman who was quite beautiful with great skin and eyes, and they were going to put a pair of sunglasses on her that were fairly transparent, and we were going to do a close-up shot of her. Well, I interviewed some wonderful models, and one particular woman was quite striking, had incredibly beautiful eyes and great skin because it was going to be a close-up shot. And I asked her if she was free that next day to take part in the shooting, because we had lined up a photography studio and a particular photographer that majored in that kind of photography. And she said, thank you so much. I would absolutely love that. So we hired her, and then the next morning came when she was due. She ended up coming in late, and here we go. She looked like she hadn't gotten any sleep all night. She told me that she had been to a major party that night. She looked a wreck, and her eyes, her beautiful eyes, were now all bloodshot, and she had some circles under her eyes. And it was a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Anyhow, what we did was give her makeup as much as we could, and we had no choice because we had the studio hired and the photographer hired, so we had to go ahead with that shoot. So we did it, and when the photographs come back, I had to go to, unfortunately, an expensive photo retoucher to get her photo completely retouched so she'd look halfway decent. And I'll never forget that. I don't think I would ever hire her again. I thought that was really unprofessional for her to have her big break and then party all night and think that she could just look presentable to do the shoot. So it's kind of a lesson that when you get your big break, do everything you can to be at the top of your game. Always, always, always. So, what else can I tell you? New York was an incredible experience. I told you that I had done some volunteer work for the National Gay and Lesbian Office for Gay Rights, and I met some amazing people who were gay activists, and one of them, who became a very dear friend of mine, his name is Thomas Smith, and Tom called me up and said, Nick, we have to talk. I've seen your work. And anyhow, he got together with me and he said, I'm working on an exciting project and I want to wave this past you and see if you'd have any interest in it. He said that we've never had at this point any feedback from any of the Fortune 500 companies that have to do with how they treat their gay, lesbian, and bisexual employees. Do the employees have the same benefits as the regular employees? Do they enjoy any of the perks that the rest of the employees have? For instance, if they open up their rooms to after hours socials or things like that. And they said we want to see if we can get some feedback. So we ended up being in my apartment with about four volunteers, and we wrote at the time together 8 points, asking them what they had done, if anything, for their gay and lesbian employees. And these were, again, the Fortune 500 companies. Well, it turns out that friends of mine said, you know, Nick, no one's going to answer you. These are Fortune 500 companies, and they're not going to go into that at this point. So I doubt if you're going to get any feedback. Well, we did. We mailed out, I think, 1,500 letters to the president of the company, to two other offices, major offices in the company, because we thought that they would give us feedback. And then we waited. And then the letters started pouring in from everybody you can imagine, all the major companies. And basically what they were saying is, what does your organization, and by the way, the organization's name was the Wall Street Project at the time. And what would you think would be the things that we should be doing for our gay and lesbian employees? Do you have a list? So we went, we said, you know what, that's a great question, and they have a perfect right to ask it. So we went back to my apartment, and we wrote 8 principles of equal treatment for gay and lesbian employees. And again, we sent those letters to all Fortune 500 companies so that they would see what we felt was fair and equal. And then we, as the results came in, we eventually published that. And come to find out, a lot of people who were gay or lesbian or even bisexual saw that survey and the results, and they literally aimed at the companies that gave us the very best results, answering the questions by far the best. And they became employees of those companies for very, very good reasons. They were the ones that were friendly to the gay and lesbian bisexual community. So I felt very privileged to have had that experience of doing the what we call the equality principles. That was the name. And the Equality Project, we renamed the Wall Street Project the Equality Project. And interestingly enough, as I was doing material for them, I thought, okay, well, I need to design a symbol that would talk about gay and lesbian rights and the fact that we weren't asking for special rights, as some of our detractors were saying. We weren't asking for special rights. We were asking for equal rights. So I thought, well, you know, the elephant is in the room. Equality is the equal sign. The equal sign. That graphic was strong, and nobody had used it at all for anything. And I thought, what if we just simply did an equality, the equal sign? And they said, could you print it on badges or buttons? And we're going to have a press conference on the steps of City Hall in New York City, and everyone coming could wear that button. I thought, well, yeah, that's a great idea. So I ended up doing the equal sign in graphics, and I found a company to produce buttons, which were a white background with kind of a purple equal sign. And we printed those, and then the day of the press conference, everybody was given a button, including me and people from various gay and lesbian organizations. And we had photographs taken of us in front of City Hall talking about the results of our survey. And I'm very, very proud of that. One of the organizations was from Washington that came to New York City to be in the press conference. And they obviously took my button back to Washington, and a couple of weeks later, that equal sign started appearing on all of their literature, on everything that was sent out. And eventually, they even went to posters and flags, and everything that they had, including brochures, was all the equal sign. And so I was very pleased about that, and I eventually contacted them, and I said, I'm very pleased that you're using the symbol that I used for the press conference, but no one else that I know of has ever used the equal sign, even though it's a very obvious symbol. So I'm asking if you could just give me credit for that. I'm not asking for payment of any kind. It's just give me credit for that. And unfortunately, I've never, ever heard back from them, and I felt very sad that they got it from my organization, from us, from my work, and they never acknowledged that. And I think that's very sad, very sad. But that happened. So I got to be honest about it. I think transparency is everything. So here we go again. Now, since this is the creative process, I wanted to get into a little bit about the fact that being creative, and especially a lot of people will go into one particular area of being creative. For instance, you might become a poet or a painter or an actor or a musician and compose songs. You might design stage sets. You might design fashion. Just to name a few things, it's such a huge area, of creativity. And a lot of people choose one particular thing and get very good at that. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think, and I'd like to suggest, strongly suggest, that the people who have been a painter all their lives, or a choreographer, or a poet, or whatever they happen to have chosen for an expression of their creativity, that they embrace another form of creative expression. In other words, if you are a painter, try writing poetry. If a choreographer, try designing something. And you'll find, and I can give you a testament to that, that you will eventually excel at another expression of creativity. And my whole point of saying that is not to limit yourself at all to any particular area of creativity. Now, even though I was a visual artist pretty much, and I did write scripts and ads and things like that, eventually I started doing other branches of creativity. I started doing voiceover work. I started writing radio commercials, which is, again, different than what I originally was trained to do. And eventually I started writing with a dear friend of mine, Jeff Leeds, an idea for a play, a comedy. And we started working on that. Now, we both had never worked together on such a project, but we had an idea, and it just simply empowered us to say, well, let's go ahead. Well, what do we have to lose? Let's write a play, a comedy. And we crafted it, and it started really getting pretty wonderful and very, very visual. We started writing the scripts of what the characters were going to say in the situations, and it was just coming along just fine. And one fine day, I was leaving my friend's apartment because we were working on his computer. At the time, I didn't own a computer, so we always wrote at Jeff's place. And as I was walking, I started hearing music of what the actors, the characters, might be singing in our play. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And so I called my phone number, because at the time, the only way I could record something as I was walking home was to call my own phone number. And I recorded the melody and sometimes the lyrics that I was hearing and feeling as I was walking home. And I did that through a pay booth, because at the time we didn't have cell phones, if you can believe that. So anyhow, I would get home and transcribe that and started working on that. And the song started developing. And I did songs for various characters in the play, and I could visually see how they would be looking and what they'd be saying and singing. And I brought that to my friend Jeff and let him hear that, the lyrics and the ideas for the songs. And we started going with that. As you know what, we don't have just a comedy, a play of a comedy. We have the makings of a musical, a full-length musical comedy. Oh, my goodness, how exciting was that? So we started working on that, and it started growing and growing and growing. And another part of the story is that a dear friend of mine who is a performer, a very gifted singer-performer in nightclubs, I happened to meet, and he said, Nick, you know, what are you doing now? What kind of creative projects are you on? And I said, well, actually, I'm working on a musical comedy. And he said, really? That's incredible. I said, yeah, I've been working with a friend of mine, and it's really coming along. And he said, well, I have to perform tonight in a club, but on the weekend, Saturday afternoon, I'm free. Why don't you come over and me and my musical partner who performed together, why don't we hear what you've got? I said, well, okay, great. But then I was thinking, these are professionals. These are professional singers, performers doing major nightclubs. And here I am, not with any experience on that level. But I said, well, what the heck? Let's do it. So I went over there, and we sat down and he said, okay, Nick, let's hear what you got. So I, in my voice, did lyrics and melody for, I believe, two or three of my songs. And they sat there, both him and his musical partner, quietly listening, very attentive. And then after the third song, I said, so that's the kind of thing I'm working on now. And there was a pause, and a big smile came over his face, and he said, hey, Nick, how would you like a partner? These are amazingly good. I almost fell off my chair. He said, you've really got it. Wow, I'm impressed. Now, for him to say that, I thought I was hearing things. He said, I really like what you're doing. One of the songs, I would suggest that you do it much slower. It's too fast. The pace is too fast, and the actors would have a hard time with the lyrics. But if you slow it down a bit, and I can show you a couple of rhythms, then you'd have one heck of a song. So I said, you know what? I would love to have you work with me and me work with you. So the answer is yes, let's do it. And together we fashioned, I believe, six or seven songs from the show. In my opinion, quite amazing. Well, as it turns out, and here's the sad part of that story, he had to leave New York and go to California, and it was going to be a permanent move. And he said, I can't, with my distance now, work with you on this. So, Nick, I'm going to have to say that I can't do any more work with you on this. I'm very proud of what we've done together. He said, but if you'd like, what we could do legally is I could sign over to you the rights to you and your writing partner, and I could put on a small fee. If you could pay me that, we'll call it even. And we came up, my partner, writing partner and I, with the money and gave it to him and just asked that he would write a letter to us saying that this was a transaction legally, that we had paid him for the rights to the songs that he had been involved with, so we'd be free and clear. And here's the very sad story. He never got back to us, ever. I tried to eventually look him up because I thought maybe it was the travel and the moving to California that might have hurt him, and he didn't remember our agreement. He never ever contacted me again. And that meant that legally we're tied up with him until we get the paperwork saying that we had legally purchased the rights to the songs that he had helped on and that we are free and clear. So right now we are still in a stalemate. We have developed the full script, and if I do say myself, I think it's Broadway material, but we can't go on now until we get the clearance. And anyhow, that's a sad part of a story of what can happen out of the clear blue sky, and sad, but true. Other parts of my creative work here in New York is that I've always loved theater. I took part in many plays. I wrote some plays both in high school and college and performed too and wrote did stage sets and even designed costumes. So I thought one of my passions has always been improv acting, and that is when people together come up with a scenario of a brief scene of something going on, and they become the characters, identified as characters in that scene, and then they perform that. It could be anywhere from a minute upwards to 5 minutes or more. And so I decided to try to create a improv acting class here in New York City. And I picked the center on West 13th Street because that's basically the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender center of New York City. And I thought there's a lot of creative people there. So I started doing that about 2.5 years ago. We had a good attendance, and a lot of people that were coming in and doing it had never acted before, but they wanted to kind of shore up their self-confidence, and they wanted to see if they could really do something like that. Now, there were other actors who were actually pros, professional actors in New York City, that also came to my classes, which was amazingly wonderful. And together, we did the classes, and they were fantastic. The creativity was there. People were acting in parts that they never dreamt in a million years that they could act upon. And not all the scenarios were about characters that were people. Some of the scenarios were, you are now a bird, you are now a dog or a cat, or you are other creatures, bears, squirrels, moose, and we worked on dialogue. And again, it was absolutely off the cuff. I'd say, okay, guys, we have the scenario. I read the scenario. You were this character, you were this character, you were that character. Are you ready, guys? Okay, action. And then they would do what the team, the three of them, could come up with. And it was extraordinary. I was blown away with the creative process and the way these people were doing amazing work as actors, also doing characters that were nothing at all like them, which was a big stretch of their creative abilities as an actor. And we've just restarted it after 2.5 years because the COVID came in and everything was locked down, including the people and including the venue, the facility at the center on West 13th Street. It was all locked down, so we had to stop doing that. And only recently has the facility reopened. And in fact, this coming Sunday, and that would be October 9th at 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m., we're going to revisit this whole thing and do more improv acting classes. I'm going to give out my email address in case anyone is interested in going to this class. My email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, but the numeral 1, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. Please, if you have any questions or comments, let me know. I'd be very happy to answer them. My class, I'm limiting it to 15 people per class, and if the demand is there, I'll do other classes on other days and nights as we go into the end of this year and into the new year, 2023. Wow, it's amazing that we're already so far into our year 2022, and it's looming. The new year is coming up before you know it. So it's got a lot of potential for sure. And looking forward to that and doing the improv acting class with some amazing people. It's not limited to any ages whatsoever. And we've had young people in there as well as seniors. And in fact, what I'm thinking of doing is doing another improv acting class at the center, and another one possibly at the gay facility in Staten Island where my partner lives. That was an idea I had, to try to do an improv acting class there, maybe once a month, or we'll see how it goes. So that's something I'm thinking about. And the other possibility too is the SAGE, S-A-G-E, which is the Gay and Lesbian Senior Organization, here in New York City, and they have branches everywhere. I was thinking of suggesting doing a class for the seniors, perhaps once a month or whatever we agree upon doing. And I'm sure that with their wisdom and with their years of life, they would have amazingly creative ideas about the class and what we can be doing and so forth. And I could write scenarios geared to the seniors. And there's a huge amount of wonderful creative thinking we could do on that level. So that's another something that's coming along, and hopefully soon we'll have some more classes happening. It's certainly one of my passions. I love doing this. Another one of my passions is continuing with my creative writing, and I've already produced about a year ago a song, and I'll tell you why I wrote it. I was hearing people saying, I can't wear my favorite sweater anymore because it has a big American flag on the back of it or on the front of it. And I feel as though I might be criticized or yelled at if I wear it in public or on the street. And I'm thinking, what in the world is that about? You're not proud to wear the American flag in some way? How in the world did that happen? And there were some people, and I'm sure we've all come across some people, that want to keep quiet about being proud of being an American. Now, agreed, America has gone through huge, huge turbulent changes. Some of the time, America has made mistakes. Of course, what country hasn't? But we try to make right what we did wrong. And that's a continuing process, and it always will be. But I thought, you've got to be certainly proud of being an American, being born into this country, and the part of that, too, is that how many men, women of the services have died so we could have our freedom as Americans. Honor them and what they fought for, democracy and freedom. Honor them by being proud of the flag. Display the flag. Wear a flag. And so forth. And so the song I came up with is called We'll Stand Up for America. And I started developing the lyrics, and they were coming to me. And then I started hearing the melody of the song. Now, I'm not a composer that can write sheet music. I've never been able to do that. I never took a course in that. So I simply sing my song, and then go to a studio, if I can find a studio that will understand what I'm doing and come up with the kind of instrumentation that I want for my song. And so I did that, and I did find a studio that had the right sound, so to speak, and one of the singers in the studio had exactly the right voice for this particular song. So We'll Stand Up for America. They took on the challenge. This was by contract, so I paid the money to help me produce my song. And the gentleman that ended up singing the song is very good at rock. He's a good rock singer, and the song I always envisioned as a rock song, so it became a rock song. And so we did by email, because they were in very far away from me. And so by email we developed a back and forth developing the song, the orchestration, and then we recorded it. And I tell you, when I heard the final product, I teared up because we got it right. It's a song that you can listen to, you can dance to, you can sing to the song. And I'm very, very proud of it. We'll Stand Up for America. And then with that, once we had the soundtrack, I decided I want to put a visual onto that. So I hired a visual office that does that sort of thing, that they will take a theme or a song or whatever and put visuals onto it through photographs that they own. So I hired a studio to do that. And after working with them about what would be best, what would work, what wouldn't work, we came up with two different videos with that same soundtrack of my song. And one of those studios, I wanted to have the lyrics on the screen as you were seeing the visuals, so that if it were shown in a theater or an auditorium or a stadium, people would be able to see the lyrics and sing along or dance too. So one of the videos, and then again, we actually did the other video the same way, has the song lyrics as well as the visual. And so for the song, the whole song, I think it's about 3.5 minutes, you're hearing the song. It's a hard rock song that you can dance to and sing to and clap to, plus the visuals. And another part of this process was I wanted the song to start off with something very, very American sounding and I thought of Yankee Doodle Dandy. Now, that song from a bygone era certainly, to me, sings of the country forming and the hard-fought battles we had with the British to try to have our own country. And so some of the melody of that song, I thought, what if we put that melody at the very beginning and end of my rock song? So it starts off with music supposedly from the 1770 something, and then it goes into a hard rock song from 2022, and then at the very end of the song it goes back to a Yankee Doodle Dandy theme with fife and drums. And one of my dearest friends, Tom Garber, who is an absolute genius on so many levels, and he excels in music, and he has a small studio. And I asked him if he could somehow produce this maybe 10 seconds worth of a fife and drum corps doing with a Yankee Doodle musical theme. And by George, he did. He came up with exactly the right 10 seconds worth, which we added to the track. So now the full product is the Yankee Doodle part with the fife and drums and sounding like the Yankee Doodle song. And then we go to the hard rock song, We'll Stand Up for America, which is very, very current. And then we go back for the last 5 seconds of the song with the Yankee Doodle with the drum and fife. And I'm very, very proud of that. If you want to hear that song, email me, and I will send you a copy of it. Email again. Here we go. Oh, Hercules, thank you so much for playing that song. What a joy. What a joy. Appreciate that. Hercules, I cannot thank you enough, of course. So ending up now, I believe we have about maybe 7 more minutes or so. And I just wanted to, final thoughts here about the creative process, and that is, creativity can take many, many forms, more than you can even imagine. For instance, if you cook, if you're a cook, you could be a very capable cook with, or starting brand new, and just beginning to learn to cook. Try not only different recipes, but things that aren't in the recipes that you think might taste good. Now, I have been doing things like that, and it's amazing if you think, well, you know, the potato soup that I made tonight, what if I put in the blender just 1 teaspoon of, and then something else you don't expect to be in it, and see what happens? And I do things like that with all different kinds of foods, including different soups. I love making soups. And you would be surprised of the amazing combinations of different taste treats that come up from that. And you've never known any other place that did put those things together, but they can really come out and be quite exciting. And you can certainly impress your friends if you invite them over for dinner and you're serving something that they really have never had before, or that particular couple of ingredients they never experienced together. And I'm just saying that's a wonderful part of creativity that anyone can do. And, of course, being creative of your own life is certainly another area of creativity. And step out of your normal whatever you do and embrace something different that you've never done before. Try it. And that can go on just many, many different levels. And just do things that seem new to you and that you've never done before or tried before. And be creative about it. Don't be afraid to try something new. Now, some things are going to go amazingly well, but not everything. Some things are going to be not so good, and you've got to be ready for that too. One of my design professors at the Massachusetts College of Art and Design in Boston said, if you don't know what to design to make or painting to do now, I want you to take a brush or a pencil and just put something on your canvas and then look at it and see what else it might suggest and add it. And then take another look at that and add something, and eventually you're going to come up with something that you had no idea about whatsoever, then you think, oh, I know what that is. This could be trees in a field and mountains in the background. Or this could be a still life with sunflowers and fruit. Or this could be a portrait of someone in your mind that you've never seen but you want to express. Try that. And it also works out for writing. Put something on a piece of paper, some words that are in your mind. It could be anything. And then think, okay, what other words would go with that on some level? And try it. And then see if it's starting to suggest a poem, a short story, or something else. And this can go in many, many different directions. It might be, you know, this would be good for a greeting card. Or this might be something that I could send as a homemade birthday card to someone in my family or one of my friends. Or this is something, a friend of mine who's an amazing painter, and she paints kind of abstract art really well. She's having another show very soon. And she went and found a place where they could put her designs. Now, these are artworks, oils, onto fabric and make dresses out of them. And she is now selling those dresses with her paintings on the dresses, the imagery, and they're starting to sell. How creative and wonderful is that? Okay, now to end up, I just want to go again, what an hour. Love sharing my ideas with you, and I love your feedback. So this is Nick Curto for The Creative Process, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you find your own path to deepen your own creative energies and more fully develop your own talents. In however many areas of creative expression your life takes you. Till next time, fully embrace your creativity in one or more areas of expression. Stay safe and always be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to you all out there. Much love. Good night.